Okay, we're going to take your phone calls now with Robert Moss as we talk about the secret history of dreaming. And welcome back to Coast. We're with Robert Moss, and we're going to take your phone calls. Robert, you talk about the need that dreaming is essential for human survival. Explain that for me.
I think we as a species rehearse the stages of our future evolution and our relations with things on this planet in dreaming. I mean, I think you see this in the minds of science fiction writers, for example. Where do their ideas come from? The best of them, the ones who anticipated big things. They come out of the realm of dreams and imagination. Then we see that with the best of the science fiction writers, 50 years later, things that they saw in this way are coming through. By the way, although he wasn't exactly a science fiction writer, he did write one alternative history entertainment. Winston Churchill saw things in this way. He spoke 20 years before the atomic bomb about weapons the size of an orange could blow up a city. So how do we dial this back to your question? I think that our evolution on this planet is anticipated and supported by our ability to enter a realm of dreams and imagination where we try things out before they're physically manifested. That's not such a strange or spooky idea. Look at it in terms of the development of language in a young child. I mean, babies, infants are dreaming all the time. They're dreaming in the womb. They're dreaming as infants. What are they doing? They are rehearsing in their dreams. I would contend the language skills and other skills that they'll need to have when they come into this world. So I think that we dream our way even when we're not conscious of doing it. And the less we dream, the more closed to the dreaming we are, the more blind we are about how we stumble around on this planet.
What about the islanders who escaped the Asian tsunami of 2004?
Well, that's a good example. That's a survival example. And thank you for reminding me of
sure.
it. Many of us remember the Asian tsunami of 2004 killed about 160,000 people after the earthquake off Indonesia sent up the tsunami. There are a small group of islands in the Indian Ocean called the Andaman Islanders. Andaman Islands, their inhabitants are just called the Andaman Islanders. They're a shamanic dreaming people. They're hunter-gatherers. In December, they're typically in their coastal fishing villages fishing. And when the tsunami came through, their stilt villages on the coast disappeared, and the Indian government, which claims the islands, concluded they'd all been washed out to sea. Sometime afterwards, an Indian helicopter scouting out the highlands is fired upon by an Andaman Islander with his bow and arrow, basically saying, go away, and they realized that the Andaman Islanders all survived. How? They knew it was coming. They knew it for two reasons, both relevant to our discussion of dreaming and its survival value, George. First of all, they live closer to earth and sea than most of us. They watch the behavior of birds and animals. They sense what was going on with wind and wave, and their natural instincts were part of their survival mechanism. But secondly, these dreaming islanders of the Indian Ocean have a traditional practice of getting together in a big house, a communal space, where they dream together. They talk themselves into it. They're lying together in the same space. They create what they call a web of dreaming. And as they're drifting off to sleep, they're saying out loud what they want to do until an agreed intention becomes clear. We want to find the fish. We want to find the jackfruit. We want to find the game animals. We want to see if there are enemies around. And they picture themselves going out into the night on a web of dreaming like human spiders, going out on a web and then jumping off it as far as they need to go to see what the people need to see. This is a practice of community dreaming for community survival that I think we want to learn about and apply to our own circumstances in our own lives. And one of the boldest initiatives that I'm leading is an initiative to develop and regain similar techniques of community dreaming and visioning. Once again, if anyone in Hollywood is listening to the show, for goodness sake, consider making a movie that might show the positive uses of dreaming to get us through.
Absolutely. Let's take some calls. More questions coming. Alex, truck driving in Missouri. Go ahead, Alex. Gotcha.
Yeah. George.
Hi.
Yeah, there's I don't know. My question is for what happened to me when I broke the guardrail. But anyway, 3 weeks after my birthday on November the 14th, I had a dream. Which is, it only happens every 10 years. When I was 19, 29, 39, and 49.
The same dream every 10 years?
Yes, every 10 years. I'm 57 years old. I'll be 59. 2 years from now.
Okay.
Anyway, the dream I had, I was going westbound on I-10 in California. On Ontario, where you got the Interstate 15 that goes south, you got an overpass that goes up. Halfway up to that bridge, I looked, and the ground started shaking so bad. You see, it's not what I saw, but what I saw when I crossed, when I broke the guardrail. But what I saw, when that ground started shaking, I looked into my right as I was going up on my right rearview mirror. I saw the mountains in back of me. They were shrinking, and there was dust all over. And then all of a sudden it changed, and then when I looked on the passenger, you know, windshield, I looked out, and I saw the City of Angels. But what I saw, George, was just, I mean, no building was standing. There was, I mean, I just heard thousands of people screaming. And as I looked back to my front, I saw the City of Ontario just into a big old pile of rumble and fire, and a great big split on the ground, just cutting in half. And just then, my question is, when I broke the guardrail, my 18-wheeler, as a truck driver, when I was 9, it went over. But when I started looking down, because I went over the guardrail, just before I hit the ground, my brain stops.
Okay, Alex, will you clarify something to me? You have not actually driven through a guardrail yet. This is happening in the dream? Or have you actually had an accident involving a guardrail?
No, this...
You've not had an accident yet. Well, let me say something to you very directly, Alex. My life has been saved, to my certain knowledge, from 3 fatal accidents on the road by dreams that anticipated a problem situation, and I was able to take evasive action. If I were a truck driver, any kind of driver, I would remember this location, and I would use this as a travel advisory to avoid a possible problem at that place. Before I go off into any apocalyptic stuff, I'm going to try and save my rear end my truck from an accident involving a guardrail at that spot. I'm going to remember exactly where that spot is, because all the business about destruction of Los Angeles, etc., that would be the destruction of my world. If I went through that guardrail, Alex, because I did not heed the travel advisory, it would be the end of my world. So I see the cities in flames as my world ending if I fail to take an advisory from my dream, which could save my life at the wheel. That's what I'm saying to you. And I'm saying it strongly because I know for certain sure I would not be talking to you on this phone if I had not escaped death on the road very clearly because of 3 advisory dreams.
Yeah, no, trust me, when the year 2011 comes, I'm gonna try to avoid from going to California. But see, this dream
you got to avoid getting to California altogether. I would avoid that spot. I'd remember that specific spot. We don't have to freak out and get too generalized about these things. You've described a specific spot. I'd keep it as an advisory in relation to that spot.
Let's go to Kathleen in California, first-time caller. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, George. Great to talk to you. I've been listening to you since you began.
Well, thank you.
Robert, we have a mutual friend, Suzette, sure.
Oh, yes.
Looking forward to meeting you when you come out for your workshop.
Yes, I'll be in California in mid-December.
Yeah, she's been talking about it quite a bit. Anyway, my question for you is, about the last 2 years now, I have been having a reoccurring dream that always involves water, beautiful places. The water can be clear or mucky, and it has to do with little children, children I know, or small children that shouldn't be talking but are communicating to me, and also deceased relatives. And they're in every dream. And this is almost nightly. I have very vivid dreams, and I dream this constantly.
Well, I guess I'm going to go straight in on you for a moment, Kathleen, because you're reminding me of something that Australian Aborigines say about dreaming. They say that when babies are on their way coming into the world, we've got little children in these dreams, the dreams that you look at for guidance on what's going on in terms of possible pregnancy or children coming through who are going to need guidance and welcome, etc., is you look for a space of water where both the ancestors that departed and the incoming souls are together. And I'm going all boy from the bush on you for a moment, but without knowing any more details and without knowing whether the specific individual dreams are different from each other, which I would suspect they are, even they've got common themes, I'm thinking that these dreams might be alerting me to possible pregnancy, my own if I'm a woman, or those of people relevant to me, to babies coming through from the realm of the ancestors. And if I'm going to go reincarnational, they might even be showing me souls of the departed that are seeking to be reborn. That's my thought about the dream.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And
thank you, Kathleen.
I'll look forward to seeing you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
How far out into the future can we dream? do we drink?
I don't think there's any limit. I mean, I'm sitting here talking to you, and during the break, I was opening a journal from 2003. George, the journal mentions a very important connection with an editor who is a good friend of both you and me, my past editor, your current editor, and maybe one of my future editors.
Bob Gleason?
And I'm staring at this. I haven't told Bob about it because I just found it. From 2003, I'm staring at this dream about Bob Gleason and Tom Doherty in their publishing house, which I used to publish with but haven't done for a while. And I was transcribing it. I'm just staggered by the relevance of this dream to certain things going on in my life 7 years later. And I've noticed, you know, so you want to know about this? You want to do something about this? You've got to keep a journal. You've got to record it because, you know, we can't remember all this stuff. The details would get blurry. I've been keeping journals for a very long time. And one of the games I play, George, is I will open an old one at random as I did this one tonight. How's that for synchronicity, by the way?
That's fantastic. Talking
to you. I opened the book. I've just been talking to Bob recently. He's telling me about you and how much he likes you and the books that you're doing. And I'm, you know, having a dialogue with him myself. And the dream is about Bob, and it's from 7 years ago. How about that?
Let's go to Aaron in Indiana, east of the Rockies. Hi, Aaron. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, wow. This is awesome.
You're on. What do you got to tell us?
Well, I had a dream. I'm not going to go into it because I called about 6 months ago, and I'm staring at a devil. And you were saying earlier about how you helped this lady face her dream. And at the end of the dream, I did run from it. And what's a way I can get back into that state so I can face that demon?
Very good question, Aaron. We do need to face our demons, and we need to name them. We need to find out their name. It's funny, you know, I once helped a woman who was worried about a demon in her dreams to face her demon, and she asked the demon its name. This might be relevant to you or not. The demon said, "I am your own fearful rage." That was the name of her demon. Another guy's his tobacco addiction. When it named itself, it said, "I'm your tobacco addiction." You know, if this has got juice for you, I mean, I can feel it. There's some energy in this for you. You know, what you can try when you're feeling brave, I'm not suggesting that you're not a brave guy, you probably are, but on a day when you're feeling good about this and ready to go, you can just sit down in a quiet place, turn off the phone, etc., and make it your intention to go back into that space where you last met that thing and face it and make it name itself and see what is to be done from that point. The act, as in fairy tales, Aaron, the act of getting the demon or the adversary to name itself is the beginning of victory. And it's funny, sometimes what we think is a demon or a monster can turn out to be an ally in disguise when we confront it and see what it wants of us. Sometimes, although we've demonized it, it is an aspect of ourselves, even of our greater power, that is trying to get a relationship with us, which in our little minds we are ignoring. So that's a thought for you for now.
Wow, thank you so much.
Okay, all the best.
What kind of dreaming is it when our dearly departed loved ones visit us?
Well, there are three reasons. You know, I wrote a book about this called The Dreamer's Book of the Dead, and my book Dreamgates is pretty much about this too. I'll stop playing author now and answer your question directly. There are three reasons why encounters with the dead, who are living, of course, just don't have bodies anymore. Accounts of the dead are natural. They're not supernatural. People say it's supernatural. Well, I guess I can't throw the word out completely because it goes beyond our ordinary understanding of nature. But encounters of the dead aren't weird, aren't freaky, aren't spooky. They can be. Of course, they can be scary. But they're natural for the following reasons. First of all, our dead are sometimes still around. They don't know they're dead. That's a common problem in our society. We don't give people a good education about what to expect after death. A lot of people die with crossed fingers or with the thinking it's a big black hole and then wake up and are lost and confused and don't know what's going on, or as in the movie Ghost, they die in a hurry and can't figure out what's happened, or they're addicted, they stay earthbound, they stay in the old places. So number one reason why the departed turn up in our dreams and also, of course, in other ways is they're still around. I mean, they can turn into ghosts if they stay around for too long. Number two, they come visiting. They come visiting us for all the reasons we call on each other. They want an update. They want to share love and forgiveness, they want to make amends, they want to deal with unfinished business, etc., etc. You know, I've written about many reasons based on first-hand information about why the departed come calling. And number three, and this is perhaps most interesting in terms of a lot of your audience who are adventurous people who would like to understand more about the larger nature of reality. The number three reason why we dream of the departed is that in dreaming we travel. We travel beyond the 3D universe. We travel beyond the limits of the body and the brain. We travel to other dimensions of reality, including the places where the departed are at home. And actually, it has been our experience through dreams and visions
of the afterlife places where people reside that have been the foundation of the geographies of the afterlife that many cultures and civilizations have preached and believed in. Those geographies of the afterlife are the result of dreams and visions that eventually are codified and then become hand-me-down versions and become awfully out of date. So, you know, one of the things I do, it's an area that I know a lot about because I died a lot as a kid. I've been talking to dead people all my life, not in the fashion of a psychic medium or a seance, but in the manner of a more shamanic dreamer who is proactive. I don't sit taking dictation from the dead, but I encounter them and talk to them. You know, I know a lot about this, and I teach people how to have healthy and better relations with the departed, how to separate from the departed people you do not want hanging around because they can confuse you and transfer their addictions and even their symptoms, and how to prepare consciously for an understanding, a knowledge of the larger reality.
Okay, very good. Let's go to Ike in Florida. Get you in before the break. Go ahead, Ike.
Yes, sir. I got a question for you there, Mr. Robert.
Go ahead, Ike.
Okay, yeah. Okay. 3 years ago, my wife passed away.
Yeah.
Okay. 3 days before my wife passed away. Okay. I had went to sleep, okay. Now, when I went to sleep, I had a dream. Well, I don't even know if it was a dream. But anyways, everything in the front room was just the way it was when I went to sleep. Okay, I was looking at myself, okay, you know, laying right there on the bed, okay. My wife, she hadn't passed away yet, but she was in the hospital. Okay, she passed away from alcoholism. Okay, now she was standing behind the couch, looking over me. Okay, but behind her was, you know, a shadowy figure. Okay, I woke myself up screaming her brother's name. You know, Ronald. I woke up, and when I woke up, I had it was just an unbelievable fear that I felt.
Why'd you scream the brother's name?
I don't know.
Was the brother in the house with you?
No, he had passed away.
He was dead.
All right, and then the wife died later.
Ike, let me give you, this is 3 days before your wife
got about
passed,
a minute
right?
before the break, Robert. Go
right.
ahead.
Okay, I'm just got a quick thought for you. You're out of your body in this dream. She's out of her body, too. You see a dark figure who is probably the death or the form of death, the death angel who's taking her. And you're calling from Ronald, in my opinion, because you want to make sure she's got a guide and friend who is not shadowy or dark to help her on the other side. That's my feeling about it. And I think this was preparing both of you, scary though it was, for what was about to happen.
I think it's remarkable what we can do in our dream state.
Yes.
It is. And I like the fact that you don't have to go to sleep to do it.
That's right.
We're going to talk about some techniques with you, Robert, when we come back, how we can get into this state. And then we'll wrap it up with final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. Art Bell will be filling in for me tomorrow. And our program will originate Monday out of the cave in St. Louis for a little bit. And we'll be back in a moment, and we'll take your final phone calls with Robert Moss on Coast to Coast AM. Robert, what are some of the techniques to induce the dream state?
Well, let's see. Give yourself a juicy intention if you're going to approach the sleep dream state. But as we discussed, dreaming isn't just about sleeping. So if you want to learn to access the dream state consciously, it starts with intention. I mean, to make a journey into conscious dreaming, you basically need three things. You need an intention that is interesting to you. Mm-hmm. Second, you need a portal. What I mean by portal, you need an image. You need preferably a visual image, a sensory image. You could picture yourself being back on that favorite beach. It can come from your waking life, or it can be a dream that has some magnetism for you, a dream that you'd like to explore because you ran away from something, you need to go beyond fear, or because you want more information, or because you want to talk to your dead grandmother, or because you want to use your dream as a portal. portal into multidimensional reality. So the second thing is the portal, a visual image. You could use a picture. You could use a tarot card, but you need a visual image. The third thing is you need a focusing and fueling system. What does that mean? It means, first of all, screen out external distractions. Secondly, give yourself something that will get you moving. I mean, in the workshops, we use shamanic drumming. It's not concert music. It's simple, simple, regular drumming. It works amazingly well for 90% of rational Westerners who've never experienced it. I've made a drumming CD that people can get if they want to give it a try without coming to workshop. Maybe music works for you, but you want something that will help your mind to screen out distraction. You don't need something complicated. I mean, a regular, simple drumming rhythm will do it well. So those are the three key things. I mean, think about those things, and you're on your way to becoming a conscious or active dreamer. For many of us, the most satisfactory portal for experiments is going to be either a dream that has some magnetism or an agreement to meet somebody that we like and have a connection with in the dreaming. So we're once again talking about shared dreaming. You have a friend, you have somebody you're connected with, you love each other, you're attracted to each other, you want to go on explorations together, make a date with that person to meet them in dreaming. You can do it overnight, but again, we're talking about conscious dreaming. You can embark quite consciously. I do this with many friends of mine, and we're not talking in this case about romantic or sexual dates. You can do that too, and if you're a grown adult, you have permission, that's okay, no problem with that. But I'm talking about shared assignments, assignations with people with whom you have something you want to study. I did it once with a musician. She wanted information on songs she hadn't written yet. She wanted to know if I could take her to a place where she would get inspiration. We journeyed together to a music school in the astral realm of the moon. I'm not kidding. We used a line from one of her songs. She went to a music school. She got voice exercises. She met some singer-songwriters she admires, and she came back with the words and the lyrics to two songs she had not recorded yet and the publishing information on the publisher who produced her music CD. This is the kind of stuff you can do.
Fantastic. Okay, back to the phones we go. Drew in Phoenix, west of the Rockies. Hi, Drew.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Drew.
I had a question for you. Have you ever heard of binaural beats or binaural beats?
Yeah, it rings a distant bell, but you're now talking about a form of rhythm, a form of sonic driving that is meant to maybe harmonize both hemispheres of the brain. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, it's basically two frequencies that are right. Just off just enough, usually no more than 30 hertz, because then your ear can differentiate the two frequencies.
Yeah.
But then if they're close enough, your brain can't differentiate, so it creates kind of like a harmonic in between, and you can pick that up. Do you know if that would also help induce part of
it? It might. I mean, once again, try it and see. I mean, I'm in favor of experiment, seeing what works for you. I haven't experimented with that personally, though I'd like to know more. Perhaps I should know more about it on behalf of other people, because as you gather, I'm someone who's simply always been able to do this. And I also find with my groups that the simple drumming, the simple frame drumming, works super effectively. So we haven't, and I have the audio CD for the drumming, so I haven't personally experimented with it. I'm familiar with a number of institutes and organizations that produce this kind of thing on recording and do trainings that are using it. And I've heard mixed reports. I mean, some good, I don't mean bad reports. I mean, some reports are good and some reports reflect limited results. So, I mean, I'm open to it if it works for you. Let's put it that way.
Can someone enter someone's dream state, though?
Yes, they can. I mean,
on their own without the other person knowing it.
Yes. I mean, let's be clear about this. I mean, although Inception is science fiction and the techniques used in Inception are most definitely fiction, the possibility of psychic intrusion, that's the word. We're not talking about shared dreaming now. We're talking about psychic intrusion or psychic invasion, is something that most human cultures have taken very seriously and been concerned about. I teach people psychic defense. I don't think that everything that goes on in astral or dream reality is sweetness and light, just as not everything that goes on this planet is sweetness and light. You can regard everything is a learning experience, but for goodness sake, you don't have to go through everything in order to have a learning experience. And there are intrusions. I mean, the sort of thing that I run into all the time in counseling people, in workshops, I don't do private counseling anymore, is for example, you've split up with your ex, and maybe your ex is an angry guy who really is jealous and horrible, and he's coming psychically into your space. He may not know what he's doing. He might just be doing it in his dream body, and he's invading you and molesting you in your bed overnight. You'd be surprised, perhaps not surprised, by how many
people have this kind of experience. How is that possible? It's possible, George, because we travel outside the body in an energy body, maybe a succession of energy bodies of varying subtlety, and we get around to them, and we can enter each other's space, and if there is a connection between us and we are not protected, an intrusion or an entry can take place, and that is not okay. So one of the things we need to learn for our sanity and our psychic wholeness is how to establish good boundaries and how to keep out what we do not want. Is it possible that people could enter our space with agendas beyond, you know, personal jealousy and sexual passion? Yes. Yes, I mean, the ancient Greeks were terrified of the people they called the Oneiropompi, which means the dream senders. They credited the magicians of Egypt with particular power of getting into the mind and doing the planting or the inception, although I don't want to use that word because I don't like the movie, implanting in the mind false thoughts. So this is a technique that has been used by the dark side since forever, and we don't want to be naive about it. We don't want to tolerate it. We want to learn to establish good psychic boundaries, not just poo-poo this stuff.
Okay, very good. Now we go back to Joe, Bronx, New York. Hi, Joe.
Yes,
go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Mr. Moss. Very interesting program tonight. I wanted to ask you a question about an interrupted OBE, or what I perceive to be such. Recently, I had this dream where I was in either a mansion or a hotel. Everything was painted white, though. And I was walking from one level to another, and on each level, I met at least two people who, they all wore the same kind of pajamas with puppy dog prints on them. I don't know how significant that is, but when I reached the third level, they were saying things to me in a heavy British accent. I couldn't quite make out what they were telling me. But when I reached the third level, I began to feel my body launching into an OBE. Unfortunately, physically, I fell out of bed at that moment.
Let me just pause you for a moment because you said something really interesting. So you're dreaming, right? You're dreaming?
Right.
And then you have experienced what you describe as an OBE, but you're already outside your body. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. You're dreaming, you're already traveling outside your body because the white mansion with the guys with puppy paw prints and British accents are not in your physical world, correct?
No.
So you're traveling. You're already traveling. You're traveling out of your body, and then you have the experience of beginning to have an OBE. What that is saying to me, given the way I understand these things, is that you are having the perception of traveling beyond your astral body or your second dream body into a third body. There's a spiritual or psychic anatomy of these things that is lacking in our Western discussion. I tried to provide it in one of my books called Dream Gates, which is a new edition just out. See, I noticed that in a certain level of dreaming, we have experiences that go beyond simply separating from one body. We can separate from the astral body as well. And what I'm interested about in your dream is it looks as if you are progressing towards, as you go up those mysterious steps, towards traveling in a body that is even subtler than the astral body or dream body. Falling out of the bed, unfortunately, interrupted the experience. But Joe, if this had enough energy or excitement for you, you could try going back in consciously. Now, the paw prints, you see, I like dogs. My youngest daughter says I'm a cat man who happens to be a dog person, but a big cat that likes dogs. The paw print, you know, in so many traditions, the dog is a guide of souls. Turns up again and again and again. And there's something about the paw prints on these guys that makes me think that there are dogs in the picture, and this is something about a spiritual geography that I would be very interested in understanding. I didn't ask you about your feelings. I mean, you're probably so startled by being woken up that you mightn't have had clear feelings, but can you tell us what your general feelings were around this?
What?
Feelings. Feelings.
Well, my feelings are that, you know, I want to resolve this OBE.
No, that's what you want to do, but how did you feel at the time? How did you feel about the mansion? How did you feel when you woke up?
I mean, I felt like I needed to figure out what they were telling me. I couldn't quite make out what they were saying.
So you had a sense of curiosity. Is that it? Feelings. Mm. What are you feeling?
Well, my feeling was that, you know, I wanted to complete the OBE. I wanted to launch.
All right. Okay. Well, feelings are terribly important. Often we have a hard time explaining our feelings. Let me move beyond that. You want to go on with the experience. You want to complete it. You can do this. You can make it your conscious intention to go back into that place. Joe, if you'd walked up those steps in the physical world in the Bronx or in Manhattan, where I'm going to be tomorrow, not tomorrow night, tonight. I'm giving a thing at the New York Open Center tonight, Friday night. If you want to go back in the dream, back into that space, you could go up those steps again, just as if you'd done it in physical reality. You've been there. It's a place. It's in the dream world, but it's a place. You could make it your intention to go there consciously in a conscious dream state. You could give that a shot. See what happens.
Thanks, Joe. We'll take a few more calls here. Fred is truck driving in Kentucky.
Another truck driver. I hope these guys are using their dreams to stay safe on the road.
Go ahead, Fred.
Yes, you haven't addressed embarrassing dreams yet, and I have one.
I've always wanted to talk about embarrassing dreams, Fred.
Well, I have one that's recurring, and I'll just throw it out here. It's I'll be out in public, and I've had it for years, and I don't understand it. And I always thought if I ever had a chance to ask somebody, I'd try to figure it out. But there'll be a public bathroom, and it'll be out in public, and there's just a bunch of people around, and I'm embarrassed, and I don't know what to do. But why would that?
I have a question before you go on. How do the other people behave around you? Do they care? Do they even notice that you need to relieve yourself in a public place? I mean,
no. It's like it's no big deal to anybody.
Okay, that's the key thing I needed to know. If this is my dream, Joe, I'm thinking it's okay for me to let it out. It's okay for me to relieve myself, to express myself, to let it out, to dump my crap amongst other people. I don't have to hold it in. It's okay. They're not noticing or they don't mind. So I'm going to compare that to my waking situation. I'm not necessarily going to take a dump in public in a literal way, but I'm going to say, where in life do I need to relieve myself by saying something or doing something that I may have been too uptight and too embarrassed to do amongst other people, but it's really okay. That would be the message of the dream for me.
What symbolism, though, huh? Jeez, Robert. Strange.
What's wrong with that?
It is. I mean, it's a strange dream.
I don't think it's a strange dream. I've heard many variations on this dream. I don't find it strange at all. But, you know, George, I hear thousands of dreams every year. And I've heard many variations on this dream. And you know what? Joe's dream is not the same as another dream with the same apparent content, because every dream is unique to the dreamer. However, because they do surface common themes and we feel something of ourselves in another person's dream experience, they do connect us. They're part of our shared human understanding. But the dream is specific to the dreamer. But I've heard many variations of that dream, and that is what I would think if it were my dream.
Fox,
and I don't think it's strange at all.
Fox is in Montana. Go ahead, Fox.
All right. Hi, George.
Hi, Montana. Here we go. Well, I just had a person from Montana in my dream teacher training program. Go right ahead.
Oh, well, here you go, then. I have a very strange dream that I'd like to share with you. It begins with this old deceased folk singer named Tom Van Zandt, and he looks at me. We're in this house, and he says, "Don't ever be afraid to call me, because there's no other place that I'd rather be." And he turns and he has a coyote tail and he disappears. And I go through the house and I find three items. I find a pouch with fur on it that looks like coyote fur. I get a drum and I get a knife. And in the very last room, there are people singing and dancing and banging the drum. And they ask me to join in, and I do.
Wow. How'd you feel when you woke up?
I felt like I experienced something that I really needed to remember. It didn't have the same quality that my normal
dream. Any other feelings? You feel good? You feel bad? You feel happy?
I felt good about it.
Felt good.
Yeah.
Okay. If it's my dream, I received a visitation from Coyote, who can appear as human or as human, and is a trickster, but also a gatekeeper, an entity associated with border territories, very important in Native American tradition, of course. And I received the items of indigenous shamanism, the drum, the knife, the pouch, the fur. So I think I've been visited by one of the most familiar and most important forms of the trickster, the coyote, of Native American belief, and that's pretty interesting to me. So I would probably want to pursue that connection, but be a bit cautious about it, because coyote can't necessarily be trusted.
If you don't feel good about a dream and you wake up, if you're sleeping, what does that mean?
It's the first feelings on waking that interest me, George. Whatever you feel inside the dream, okay, that's important. But more important is how you feel on waking. So I always want to know, are people happy, sad, a sense of urgency, laid back, or are they detached? The first feelings are going to be your best guidance on how, where to go with the dream, and whether it's literal or symbolic, etc. So I always want to know the feelings. I really don't want to comment on a dream unless I know those first feelings, because they will be the best, first and best guidance.
Couple minutes to go. Tell us very quickly about that story of the biggest oil discovery dream.
Oh, God. Yes. I was actually once, I've been bumped to first class on a plane. Unlike you, I don't fly first class all the time, George.
I don't. I go coach all the time.
I'm teasing you. Yeah. But anyway, I've been bumped to first class, maybe because I was wearing a suit that day, which is pretty exotic for me. But it's looking good till I've got this 400-pound guy sitting next to me, spilling over everything. He's in the oil business, and the conversation's going all right till he says, what the hell do you do? And I try to explain, and he basically says, what the hell good is it, you know, paying attention to dreams? And I tell him the story I will now tell you and our listeners. Oil business, huh? Well, I want to hear a story about a dream in the oil business. Oh, sure, okay. So I say there was a Brit called Colonel Dixon in Kuwait in 1937 who paid attention to dreams. And he dreamed that there's a sandstorm in the desert and a crater is opened in the sand. And at the bottom of the crater, there's a slab and there's a mummy on the slab. And the mummy starts coming alive. Sounds like a horror film so far. And the mummy shrouds blow away and there's this breathtakingly beautiful woman. And the colonel cleans her up, takes her home. She gives him an ancient coin and says, go get it, basically. And the colonel has his wife write the dream down. She's not a submissive woman, Violet Dixon, but she's accustomed to this. She writes the dream down. And then in the morning, the colonel goes to see an old Bedouin woman who's good at dreams. And she says, listening to the dream and listening to the description of a strange solitary tree near the crater in the sand, she says, that's in the Birken Hills. I know that tree. It's such and such a tree. You get your friends to go there and you'll dig up the treasure. So he knows what that means. They're looking for oil. They haven't found any. He goes to the directors of the Kuwait Oil Company and the Sheikh of Kuwait, and he's not some New Age marginal type. This is Colonel Harold Dixon, recently retired as chief British political agent in Kuwait. They listen to him. And the Kuwait Oil Company moves a rig from the dry hole they were drilling up into the Birken Hills, and the following year they hit the biggest oil find in world history up to this moment. Birken number one. It produces the petroleum that got U.S. shipping across the Atlantic during World War II, and unfortunately, of course, it distantly gives us the Gulf War and all of that.
What a great story, though. Robert, we're out of time. I want to thank you. Good luck in everything you do. Keep in touch, all right? Robert Moss, The Secret History of Dreaming. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Gina Salvati, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Snappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, who will be in on our next program, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.